Well, good evening and welcome back to the Journey Home program. I'm your host, John Mark Grodi, here on EWTN, and we have this opportunity once again to share the continuing story of the gospel as it's played out in the lives of God's children. Today, we're joined by Becky Carter. She's a Catholic revert, former non-denominational Christian, and actually her written story can be found at chnetwork.org entitled, My Protestant Husband Led Me Back to the Catholic Church. Becky, so great to finally get you here.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. We can hear your story tonight. We've been trying to actually bring you out to do this show for a while, but we kept getting missing ways.
Right. Yeah, it's been quite the journey, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Well, wonderful. Glad you finally made it.
Me too.
Let's go back to the beginning. Where should we start your particular story?
Yes. Well, I was born and raised into a Catholic family in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and religion was always part of our family. We always went to Mass on Sundays. We, all the holy days of obligation. But I was raised in a time where I would say maybe the catechesis was a little lacking.
Sure.
And maybe a little more culturally Catholic. I did go to Catholic schools from kindergarten till 12th grade and all the things in between. But my family was just, my mom was actually not Catholic. And so I do have a great memory of her coming into the church. Uh-huh. She had actually started RCIA and my father didn't even know. And it wasn't until they started doing all the rites that he realized what she was doing. So that was a neat time. So my mom was raised Methodist and then converted when we were a little older, but yeah. Just went through all my sacraments, received confirmation when I was in high school. You know, I look back on that time of confirmation and I was probably in a stage of, I don't know, rebellion, or I just didn't know. I just didn't care. I just didn't listen much, but it's just what we do, right? We go through those different rites and sacraments. So I remember that time of formation. Maybe we didn't take it too seriously. But I'll never forget the night that we were confirmed. And we were on our way back. And I sat in the car and something was different. I didn't know what it was. I had no idea what that would even mean for, was that now? Was that later? You know?
Yeah.
But I do have a vivid memory of that sacrament, like taking root, like the seed was planted. Excuse me. And so, again, I just kind of continued on with kind of growing up and doing the college thing. And
would you say that up to that, you know, again, even up into that confirmation experience, did you have a relationship with God or was it still just
It was kind of out there, having a relationship with Christ, you know, that whole, we always talked about God the Father, but I do believe that I missed somewhere along the way, that real relationship with Christ, did not practice the sacrament of confession on a very regular basis, didn't really understand the importance or the beauty. It was almost more like that punishment. So to have a relationship, I don't know. I look back on those years and I do kind of ask those questions and wonder. I do also have a pretty vivid memory as we started getting a little older. Of course, my mom had been in the church for a while now, and my parents had their own conversion, really. Yeah. You know, my dad had always been Catholic, but he started making crucios, and then he felt a calling to the diaconate. Oh. So he started that seminary process, and of course, they're all gung-ho, let's say the rosary, as a family every night, and my brother and I were like, no, you know, we were in high school at that point. But to hop back just a little bit, when I was younger, we went to another parish. And I should ask my parents about this. Like, if it was a mission or some, it was some special event, and talking about Mary. And I remember that day really feeling a connection to her. And, you know, what did that really mean? And then I did pray the rosary once in a while through that. And so I think that relationship with Mary has just always been there.
Yeah.
But I couldn't explain any of those. They're just all little seeds
sure.
along that journey,
right.
you know. So once I left high school, left the Catholic school scene, you know, honestly, I just kind of wandered. Even in high school, I was a wanderer.
Right.
I was looking for things to make me happy. I was looking for relationships to, I don't know, fill that God-shaped hole is really the best way for me
yeah.
to explain it. And I was probably pretty miserable and just kind of wondering. When I was about 19, I met a guy and he was a Christian. He was raised in a non-denominational church, and he would ask me all kinds of questions, and I couldn't answer any of them. You know, like, why do you have a pope? Now, and this was back in the day when we didn't have Google. We had the encyclopedia. And he was from a small town that it was just a missionary church. So he couldn't even go to the Catholic church and maybe go ask somebody questions because it was just no one really there to minister in that way. And so he would ask me these questions. What is a vicar of Christ? Or, you know, why do you have a pope? I don't know. We just do. Why do you go to confession? I don't know. We just do. Why do you worship Mary? And I was like, well, I don't think we worship Mary. But again, I just could not articulate what I believed. And again, in my own hard-headedness, I never really put two and two together that my father, who was now teaching RCIA classes at the local parish, was going through seminary, who could actually answer all those questions, right? I just never looked in that direction. I always asked the Lord, like, why? Why? I had everything right there. Anyway, so we started dating, and we dated for several years, and we knew that we wanted to worship together, even though we weren't necessarily living Christian lives at that point. I find it interesting that we thought it was very important that we would worship together.
Yeah.
And that was a very early on conversation, but again, he knew more about the Bible. He could quote scripture. He knew what he believed and why he believed it. And in my mind, that is what compelled me. Well, if I don't know what I believe, then why should that really matter? He knows what he believes, and he knows the Bible. And so that's the direction I should go. It came down to the point that we were going to get married. And being a confirmed Catholic and not necessarily going to a Catholic church, nor wanting to make the situation uncomfortable and getting married in a Catholic church, we opted to get married outside. Being that my dad was in the diaconate, it did produce a little bit of a conflict. And it was actually a very difficult time, to be honest. You know, I know I put him and my mother in a tough spot. Well, I know now better.
Yeah.
And he even asked me, you know, are you denouncing the Catholic Church? And I honestly did not even know what that meant. And I said, well, number one, I don't know what that means. And I don't think I would even have the authority to do that. And I hope that in that moment, that spoke to him and gave him a little bit of a comfort and peace that I truly didn't understand what I was doing. And for culpability's sake, you know, I was just wandering.
Yeah,
I had
yeah.
no idea where I was going. So my parents did show up for the wedding. We did get married outside. And we were married for quite a few years. And, you know, we really wandered through, gosh, that's my word, I guess, is wandering. Mm-hmm. We really wandered through the Protestant landscape for many years. Right after we first got married, we wanted to join a Christian church there where we were living. And the pastor said, well, if you want to join, you have to be baptized. And I said, well, I am baptized. I was baptized as an infant. And he said, I'm sorry, but we do not recognize that type of baptism. You need a believer's baptism. And I was very hurt by that, very confused by that. I'm like, I've just always been baptized. I never even questioned that. So it took a little bit, and no one coerced me. I just had to grapple through that. And I wasn't totally comfortable. I always had a little bit of hesitation, but I still felt like it's what I needed to do. So I did agree to be baptized. And funny enough, it was my husband who baptized me. The pastor allowed it, and, you know, so it is a neat memory.
Sure.
You know, yeah. And a special moment. It was still a step for me in learning who Jesus was, making that acknowledgement, and then also moving forward to have a relationship with Jesus. So it was a defining moment.
Yeah. It was an act of faith, you know.
It was absolutely an act of faith. Mm. And so that kind of started the journey for us. We moved down to Texas after that and really struggled to find a church that fit our beliefs, and ended up at a Baptist church. And we went and sat with the pastor. We're like, okay, well, we're not Baptist. We don't want to be Baptist, but we really like being here. Like, you're not going to make us Baptist, you know, that kind of thing. And we stayed there for many, many years. And an interesting thing happened. We had a Sunday school class, and it was all young married couples, and no one had children yet, but people were starting to have children. And the Sunday school teacher, he liked to pose questions, not necessarily indoctrinate everyone.
Yeah.
In that Protestant landscape, you get a lot of different beliefs, even within denominations.
Right, right.
So, he asked one day, he asked about contraception. And he said, you know, some believe that contraception can be an abortifacient. And that one just struck me at the core, and I started really questioning. I called pharmacists, I called everyone, like, what does this really mean? Mm-hmm. And, you know, what the primary function is and the secondary functions and all that. And so my husband and I worked through that, and we chose to not use contraception in early on in our marriage. And it's interesting to watch how that plays out. And that's why I really bring up that point is because it really plays out in our entire marriage. So again, we are walking through, love Bible studies. I love the Lord. I mean, we are both growing in our faith. Our faith is pivotal. It's definitely part of our life, and it's the central part of our life. We moved back to Arkansas and again had to find a church. And we went back to a non-denominational church that we had originally gone to or visited way back when. And it had grown again, just, I mean, it was fine. You just go, you listen to the message, good music,
right. That
kind of thing. Right. So we started having children, had all of our children dedicated. We have 5 children. Actually, I don't think our 5th one was dedicated there. He was not dedicated, but all the other ones were. And I liked that ritual. I look back now and it really made me feel a little more tied to my original faith. And, you know, baptism was such a thing growing up and in our tradition, but not in the non-denominational church. And it's like you're looking for something like,
right.
I have kids now. Like, what am I, how am I starting?
Yeah, something's supposed to happen here.
Something, right? And so
yeah.
We did do the dedication and we liked the thought of the community being around us and encouraging us along in that parenting.
Talk for those who aren't familiar with that term, dedicated as opposed to baptism. What is a dedication in that context?
Yeah, so in that context, it was you go to some classes.
Yeah.
And you learn about what it is to raise a child and in faith and leading them to Christ. And it's really just a public commitment.
Right.
You know, kind of like baptism. It's just a public commitment, right? You just stand up and you say, we are going to raise this child in the Lord and to know the Lord and to seek the Lord. I mean, that really is all it is. But it is still a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
And it you know, it meant something.
For sure.
For sure. Yeah. So from there, my husband started getting a little disengaged. And he really started asking the question, What did the early church look like? And I don't think this is what it looked like. When you read the New Testament, I don't think this is what it looked like. And he had a buddy at work, and they really started reading church history. So he started doing this, you know, going back in history. I'm just busy raising babies and being with my friends and just trying to survive that season of life. But he was really digging, and I don't guess I realized exactly what that meant. And so his friend had started to attend a Presbyterian church, PCA, Presbyterian Church of America. And that's where all the theological terms really started to come in. And my husband is very much an intellectual, and it really challenged him, made him question things. And he's like, Becky, I really think we need to go check this out. And of course, me being my stubborn self was like, no, we're fine here. And I think one of the last times we went to that particular church, there was like smoke on the stage with loud music. And I think we were both at the point where that felt like we're not there. Like we need something different. And so we went over to the PCA church, and we were there for, goodness, 4 or 5 years. And going through their membership classes, now once you start moving back in history of the church, you start finding, you know, more church authority. Organization.
Right.
And so we had to go through a membership class, and we talked about the Apostles' Creed. And of course, One Holy Catholic Church just meant universal. They were very, very clear to make sure that we understood that. But what I really appreciated about that time at the PCA Church, first, we made wonderful friendships. We really affirmed each other. We built each other up. We dug into scripture together. It had more of a semblance of liturgy, obviously, and people really took their faith seriously. And they also believed in infant baptism. So every time there was a baptism and the pastor would explain what was happening, of course, baptism does not save. They don't believe that. But we do believe it's important and it has its role. And I always felt like that fell flat. Like, wait a minute, if this, then what? And I kept asking that question over and over, like, wait a minute, there's got to be something else. It's just not, my logical brain kicked in. Apparently, I do have a very logical and reasonable brain that I never practiced before. Yeah. And so we did have our children baptized, all of them, on the same day. And it was really actually quite wonderful. Still didn't really understand exactly what was the, was this efficacious? Did it really matter? But it was beautiful. And I know that that tugged at my tradition, you know, and it brought me back to where I was raised. And that similarity was very comforting to me.
Well, even just encountering, again, it's interesting because at this point, you said your logical brain kicked in because you actually encountered differences that mattered. Right?
Yep.
A real sense of, okay, boy, what does baptism do? Does it do something? Mm-hmm. Does it not do something else? Then, you know, they can't be both. So it does, you know, cause you to move into a different mode of thinking about what do I believe?
Right. Well, and by this point, we had been to, several different churches? And even trying to find a church when we were in Texas was very difficult. And so just all those seeds of being like, it should not be this difficult to find a church, you know? And it was, it was stressful. Hated going in and not knowing anybody. Like, what are they going to teach? Do we like this pastor? You know, it was all always revolved around the pastor. Yeah. And then if we liked them, then we would meet the people. And so, we had the children baptized, and that was beautiful and wonderful, and had a lovely group of friends. And we would hammer out some really hard topics. That is where I, my husband also was more entrenched in higher theological thinking.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot of words, our bigger words, that at the time I didn't realize how important they were, but it actually prepared me for when it was time to start understanding Catholic theology. So again, digging deeper, but kept butting heads with larger topics. We would talk about justification versus sanctification and who does it? Is it done unto us? Like, do we have any say in it? You know,
predestination,
the double predestination, and really big, heavy topics really became important. And I just never even realized that they even mattered. But they started to matter. And again, all these years from that Sunday school class to this point in our faith walk in the Presbyterian Church and you know, kind of walking back through history church-wise, I've asked women along the way, the whole time, I'll always go ask a wiser, you know, older woman for counsel, the whole topic of contraception, because, I mean, it just wasn't a question. People, you know, you either used contraception or you followed more of that quiverful, you just have as many babies as the Lord provides, and there's no other real discussion around that. It's just right. a pretty black and white statement on both sides.
Yeah.
And we never came to this point of understanding exactly, like, there's got to be an answer, right? That, why do I look at these people who we go to the same church, we believe in all the same theological tenets, how can this, you know, God-fearing, Jesus-searching family believe so strongly over here, where you have these others who, I know they love the Lord, I know they're searching Him, they read the scriptures, they read the same scriptures that this family does, and they have absolutely no problem using birth control pills. And I just really struggled with that, the polarity of it, and like, where's the answer?
Right.
Well, I mean, by this point, we had been married for, you know, 14 years. Again, we had 5 children, and we got tired of asking questions.
Yeah.
And so we made permanent decisions, and my husband wasn't ever sure of it, though he was the one who said he never wanted children. We always joke about that, and now he has 5. But he's the one who hesitated, where all along I was the one who said, no, we can't really, that's for the Lord. So we kind of flip-flopped at that moment, but we moved ahead. And it would be in just a year when we would become Catholic.
Wow.
And finally have all those answers, right?
Yeah.
So, again, in that Presbyterian church, the church authority, there were some things that were happening. It didn't realize really what it meant to submit yourself under that church authority until you started watching them actually use their authority on others. And the day is very vivid for me when my husband called, and we knew some things were going on, and he said, I just need you to know we will never go back to that church. And now you got to remember, these women, we all homeschooled together, we did life together.
Yeah.
And I froze. I was like, well, okay, but what does that mean? Where do we go? Again, it comes back to that same thing of, now we have to church shop all over again.
That pressure.
It's so much pressure. And I mean, at some point you've shopped all the churches, right? And you're trying to find a church that fits your beliefs. And at this point we have been all over the place, and we've come to this place. And so we decided to go back to another Baptist church at that time. And while we tried to figure things out, and the problem with that is the pastor was Calvinist, so he fit that PCA theology, so we enjoyed his sermons. But my husband met with him, and he said, if we decide to become members, you know, what is that going to mean? Because now, back to baptism, our children have been baptized as infants.
Right.
And for our children to ever be allowed to receive communion, to participate in any communion services that they do, or to become members of the church, what does that look like? And because they were Baptist and part of that field of theology, even though he was a strong 5-point Calvinist, just like everything else, he's like, they would have to be rebaptized.
Wow. You've been around this rodeo before.
I know, right?
Isn't
like,
it? It's like familiar that territory.
That, gosh. It's funny how the Lord works.
Yeah, yeah.
And so my husband came home after speaking with him, and he calls this his big epistemological crisis.
Yeah.
And he didn't know what to do, other than he told the pastor, he's like, I had my children baptized as infants. Like, how can I go back to them now and say, oh, no, that was wrong. We're going to do it this way now so that you can be part of this church. Yeah. Because we had adopted infant baptism. Mm-hmm. We believed in it. And what, do we just give that up just so that we can be members of this congregation? And so we stayed there for a little while longer because, again, we felt it was just a good, safe place to be. We knew many people that went to church there. And we just kind of hung for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, let's take a little break there.
Okay.
Because we'll pick it right back up. But it's interesting to me that there's God's providence and just the way he designed the universe and designed our, you know, us humans. Mm-hmm. It's funny how children sort of like, they push the questions, right?
Yes.
They make us face up to, what do I actually believe about life and about marriage and about baptism and about what I'm going to teach these kids about salvation?
Right.
They really do force the issue.
Absolutely. And I'm thankful that my husband took it serious.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll be right back to hear the rest of that story. Again, we're joined tonight by Becky Carter, Catholic revert, former non-denominational Christian. And we'll be back in just a couple minutes to hear the rest of her story. See you then. Welcome back to the Journey Home program. We're entering the second half of the hour tonight talking to Becky Carter. She's a Catholic revert and former non-denominational Christian. And we've, great story. Thanks for sharing it with us so far. And when we left off, you know, you'd been through this circuitous route through different denominations in the evangelical world, non-denominational, Baptist, Reformed theology. And you're at this, again, this point where you've gone back and forth in terms of the theology on baptism, and now you have this news that to join this Baptist church, that your children would need to be rebaptized again, which was just not a place you wanted to go.
No.
Right?
You know? Well, it really bothered my husband mostly, and so that's why I kind of joke that my husband pulled me away from the Catholic Church, and then he dragged me back. We had been camping out at this Baptist church, knew we wouldn't be able to stay there any longer. And again, my husband had his buddy at work, and they had been having discussions for a long time. And my husband had been reading Catholic theology. And he didn't really tell me much about it. Every once in a while, he would like drop a little hint. But I just never really anything that I was concerned about, I guess you could say. I did like my thought of once saved, always saved, and again, not truly understanding my Catholic faith.
Right.
Growing up, I always felt like, oh, I can lose my salvation, you know, and especially that was kind of reiterated as I learned other faiths. I look back on Catholicism and think, oh, well, I don't want to go back to that old tradition where I can lose my salvation. Like, I love the Lord. How can that change? So my husband started dropping little hints. Like, well, you know, in the early church. Or he even started talking about early church fathers. And, of course, I had absolutely no clue who an early church father was, but the question he had begun to ask himself back at that other evangelical, just before we went to the Presbyterian church, and he kept saying, this cannot be how the early church worshiped. This cannot be how God set it up for us. And he had stumbled across, you know, all these writings from those who had walked with the apostles.
Right.
And to know that that was in writing and we could read it and know, like, these people walked with Jesus.
Right.
How could their testimony not matter? And how they're so fresh from Christ. Like, how could they have gone wrong that fast? And so he really started reading that, and I can't remember what the name of the website he had stumbled across, and I think someone shared their testimony and kind of shared a defense of the Catholic Church. And he's like, Becky, I'll never forget when I read it. I just kind of closed it. And I just looked because it was the first time he ever heard a defense of Catholicism or just Christianity as a whole that was logical and it was seamless and it made sense.
Yeah.
And so the Lord had been working on him for quite a while. So one day he said, hey, why don't we go to Mass? And in my stubborn ways, I was like, why? Like, I don't want to go back to the Catholic Church. Been there, done that.
Yeah.
And he's like, I really think we need to be Catholic. And I was like, fine, let's go. Our children, we had a little staycation, and our children were at a friend's house. It's very difficult to church shop.
Yeah.
With children, young children.
They don't like change.
No, they don't. Well, and we didn't want to drag them all over, right. Like here and there. And and some of our children were a little bit older, and so they were really aware, you know, at that time. And so I was like, fine, you want to go to Mass? Let's go. Let's get this out of your system, and let's go. So we did. We went to Mass. And of course, I run into somebody I know, and I just looked at them. They're like, oh, hi. And I'm like, nope, don't worry. I was really, really kind of ugly about it. It's like, we're just here. We're not Catholic. And she just kind of looked at me. And so the priest gave the homily, and he was a Lutheran pastor. So he was one of our married priests. And so
he had become Catholic.
He had become Catholic. Okay. And
we probably have him in our system.
Yeah, probably. good old Father Larry. Yeah. And he gave a sermon, that homily, that really spoke to me. And I think it had been a really long time since what was spoken was so applicable. And it was when Jesus was hanging on the cross and they had hurled insults at him, and he's like, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they do. And that was a game changer in my whole life, even still now.
Wow.
Those words, when someone is hurting me or hurting my children, I always try to remind them, hurt people, right? Yeah. And to not make that person evil. Let's not make that person bad. Let's just try to understand where they're coming from. And it does really reduce how we respond to someone else. So as we left that day, I knew we were going to be Catholic. I didn't really say very much. But I knew, and I couldn't put my finger on that. So I became more open to hearing some of the things my husband was reading and learning along the way. And it was almost like a fire hydrant. So all these years, you know, I have extremely devout Catholic parents who have been praying all these years for us to come home. You know, they'd leave little booklets here. We had Magnificats at our house. When they would come stay, they would just leave things on the nightstand. But masses said for us, holy hours done for us, rosaries, I mean, sacrifices, sufferings, all of it on our behalf. And I also liken it to the grace of my confirmation. It was like once I was open this much to the Lord and Catholicism, it just poured in, and I couldn't get enough. I couldn't ask questions fast enough. In all my strong tenets, like especially Calvinism, they just fell. And it was easy for a lot of those to just fall away. And not everything was easy, but those did. The hard part of that is when you come from a denomination that is pretty staunchly anti-Catholic, Your friends still believe in that
right
way. So our conversion in was difficult in that we lost a lot of friends in that process. And that's hard for a lot of people to understand. And we all tried, but, you know, you can't really talk about it anymore. First of all, we were on fire. It's all I wanted to talk about. It's all my husband and I ever talked about. It's all we read. Church fathers, Eucharist, like all the things. All those questions we had all those years. Well, why does this congregation believe that? Is it infant baptism? Or is it, you know, a believer's baptism? And all those questions all of a sudden made sense. And you had consistency, you had logic, you had reason. And the realization of it's not either free will or predestination.
Right.
It's both.
Yeah, some of those issues really come down to, yeah, that either or a both and.
Right. And so I finally started to see that all denominations had a piece of Catholicism in them.
Right.
And putting it all together was just an eye-opener. You know, the scriptures talk about removing the veil from our eyes. And it is exactly what happened. And as it was very difficult for my father to be at our wedding and to support that, now, and I never talked to him, I never asked him all those questions, right, when I was younger and trying to answer my husband all those years ago, now I had him as a resource. And so I would call him and we would talk for hours. I would be like, wait a minute, but what about in Romans? You know, I was like, Romans is just, it's so not Catholic. And he goes, it's Catholic, Becky. I promise it's Catholic. And I just had to kind of rewire the way I was reading the scriptures, understanding and how to funnel, you know, why our traditions are what they are. And now, of course, Romans is very Catholic.
Right. You don't realize that you're reading it with a lens.
Absolutely.
And then you realize, oh, there's an optional lens here. And so then which one does actually sort of fit? Yeah.
Oh, yes. So that was a little bit of a redemption, having my father available and talking through it, you know, all those years later. So then it came time for us to start RCIA. And of course, because I was confirmed, all I really needed to do was go to confession and I could receive again. And the priest at the time felt it very important for Jim to come back in at the same time that I did. Jim had such a strong intellectual conversion that he'd been studying it for so long. He really knew the faith very well. And so they decided to bring him into the church early. Our marriage was being convalidated on our 15th wedding anniversary. And they got special permission for him to come in to the church on the day of our convalidation. Wow. So he received confirmation, first communion, confession earlier that day. He found out the night before.
The sacramental.
He got doused pretty good. And another redeeming part of that is, of course, my parents were there.
Yeah.
And my dad's a deacon, and so he was part of that mass, and he helped that whole, you know, kind of journey come full circle. And he gave the homily. Of course, I cried like a baby. It was just a lot of redemption in that moment, and we lost a lot. And friends and that community. But, I mean, God consoled in so many ways. Yeah. He was there. He made himself present in so many ways. And of course, now we are involved in the parish and the community, and wouldn't change it.
That's beautiful.
For the world.
Yeah.
And so now all of our children are Catholic, and their baptisms, mm-hmm. those were still good.
They're good.
And to tie back to the contraception yeah. piece of it, once we became Catholic and I learned this thing called theology of the body and started reading it, mm-hmm. all those questions were answered too.
Are you able to give us a kind of a quick elevator pitch for those who aren't familiar with JP2's
yeah.
theology of the body?
Well, goodness, I can just give you my version
sure.
and what it meant
yeah.
to me and, well, to us. It was the proper view of our bodies, the proper view of what marriage is, the proper view of how marriage is ordered, and the beauty of it all. It was so beautiful to fully understand what our self-gift is
yeah.
to our spouse, and to truly be able to fully give of ourselves. And that one, that really hit home. If we can't give all of ourselves, then we're just missing out a little
yeah.
bit.
Yeah. So John Paul II, in the theology of the body, what he kind of fills in a blank that we all often felt, even we who were brought up with a Christian anthropology, even in Catholicism, sometimes we kind of just miss, for various reasons, you know, the church's vision mm-hmm. of who we are as human beings, as God has created us. He mm-hmm. created us man and woman. He created us for marriage. He created us, you know, for family. And that something about that, it's not extra. I mean, throughout the history of Christianity, we've sometimes swung, you know,
sure.
in different directions. And at some times, the body begins to seem like an extra,
mm-hmm.
you know, or less important. Or,
oh, sure.
Or that we're spirits kind of driving around bodies. And that, but no, but we, God made us body and soul.
Mm-hmm.
And something about not just the individual, but the married couple, mm-hmm. the male and female together, bespeaks something about God.
Absolutely.
And so it's a positive vision. It's not mere, you know, marriage and sexuality are not an area where there's just a bunch of thou shalt nots.
Right.
It's actually a positive vision.
Absolutely.
And vocation that he gives to us.
And to be able to teach your children about it
yeah.
and to share that part of our lives and as married couples and what that really looks like and how to combat it with what the world is teaching us. I have felt very equipped to speak to our children about it and try to overcome, like, no, it's not wrong, it's not bad. I mean, how many people grow up thinking, oh, it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's good and it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And so I always try to continue in that language to my children because I don't want them to have a distorted view of it. And the world is doing everything it can to distort their view of it.
Right.
So, yeah, that has been a huge piece of healing and understanding through our journey,
yeah.
for sure.
We talk of you, we have about 6 minutes left, and again, one of the themes throughout your story is encountering these different views of sacraments, in particular mm-hmm. baptism. You know, we're baptized, and then baptized again, and then baptized by children, and to be rebaptized. Talk a little bit about now your understanding now as a Catholic of what sacraments are and what they do and what difference mm-hmm. that makes to your relationship with God.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, you know, being in some of our other denominations, you were talking about the separation of body and soul. Mm-hmm. And I will not be able to name the heresy, but the heresy of, like, our body is bad.
Right.
The soul is good.
Yeah.
There's a couple of them, I think,
Manichean
along.
Is,
yeah.
It falls under multiple headings, probably.
Yes. And the whole, you know, dunghill covered in snow theology. One thing I struggled with deeply as a Calvinist was my salvation.
Right.
How can I really be saved if I'm still sinning? like this. Like, I feel rotten on the inside, right? How do I know I'm saved? How do I know I'm elect? Like, am I living this false life like I want to be? And there were several times, actually, that I fell into quite a bit of desolation, questioning my salvation, right?
Right.
Which is the opposite of what you would think. As a Catholic now, I don't question my salvation. I don't become desolate anymore because I know I have access to the sacraments. Mm-hmm. I can do all things through God's grace. Right. And that grace is what affects my life. That grace is what gives me the power to do good. Like, there's nothing bad with doing good works, right?
Right.
We're called to them.
Yeah.
It's not evil. It's not a works righteousness. It's God's grace, so he can receive the glory.
Yeah.
And to allow him to animate us, I don't feel stuck that I can't do good things because I don't have works righteousness, right?
Yeah.
So knowing that I have the sacrament of confession and the mercy and truly understanding the vastness of God's mercy, it coming back into the church and understanding his mercy, it's just, it's broadened.
Yeah.
I don't even know, there aren't words really to describe it other than it's just vast.
Right.
I think of the ocean.
Yeah.
And you know, you can't even see where it ends.
Yeah. You mentioned that, you know, the dung heap covered with snow theology, you know, the fact that we're totally depraved and it's only God just kind of covering up and just kind of like awkwardly not looking at our sins, rather than what's implied by Catholic view of sacraments and grace and sanctification, right, is that we're being transformed.
Yes.
And again, as you said, it's not works righteousness.
Right.
I can't do it on my own.
No.
I am helpless without grace.
Absolutely.
But grace came before. Grace is working in me, even in my own choices. My free will is itself a sort of grace.
Right.
It's a natural sort of grace. And that I'm able to participate in that. And what's happening is not that God's just ignoring awkwardly my sins. It's that I am forgiven and I am transformed. I'm being transformed. I was saved. I'm being saved. I look forward in hope to the culmination of that.
Right.
And so it's this very positive, beautiful vision that doesn't do away with our sins, but always gives us a way to run back to the cross and have something to do with our weakness.
Yeah. Right? Well, I mean, Jesus came down and he did.
Right.
Like, understanding that whatever Christ came to this earth to do, he redeemed it.
Yeah.
And that is one thing I have to hold on to. One of my spiritual directors would even say, God redeems your sin. Like, he uses your sin and he redeems it.
Right.
And I'm like, wait, what do you mean? Like he's using my sin for my good? That doesn't comprehend to me, but his point is redemption. It's all redemption. Right. Death is redemption. Our death has been redeemed. Suffering has been redeemed. Mm-hmm. And to be able to share theology with suffering to people who don't, can't really wrap their minds, and I mean, I can't even wrap my mind around it either, but the beauty of suffering and how if Christ came down and suffered, now there's beauty and there's redemption and power in it.
Right.
So, it's been.
Yeah. Well, so many of the concepts, the theological concepts can sound to some people so highfalutin, but it's so practical because it gets down to the day-to-day questions of suffering and grace and choice and mistakes and apologies.
Right.
That you trace that all the way back to this theology of who we are and who God is and what it means that we've been redeemed by Christ. And it's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. And the church is visible.
Yeah.
And we do have a place to go.
Yeah.
Yes, we are also the body of Christ, but we do have that physical space to go to where Christ is present in the Eucharist, in the tabernacle, or in adoration. The sacraments are there for us, daily mass, whatever it is. It's very tangible. God made us tangible. It's the body and soul. We're both.
Amen. All right, Becky. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Again, if you like to, well, Becky's written story available on our website, chnetworth.org, and it's entitled My Protestant Husband Led Me Back to the Catholic Church. Again, if you would like to revisit this story, you can do so there, as well as many other stories, both, you know, Journey Home programs, as well as written stories and testimonies, probably from somebody who's coming from a similar background that you are. So know that God loves you and that you too are on a journey, and we'll be back with you again next week here on the Journey Home program. God bless you. See you then.